Yo soy Yolanda Santiago Correa.
Yo soy Nora de Arco.
Yo soy Esperanza Jean.
Yo soy Andrés de Arco.
Soy Gessner Josué Pereira Sánchez Otálora Rentería.
Y bienvenidos a Majestad Prieta.
Hello everybody, bienvenidos a el segundo episodio de Majestad Prieta. Happy February, and more specifically, happy Black History Month. We're joining this month for our second episode of season one, and we're going to be talking about precisely Black History Month. What is the role of Black history in our history para los Latinos, para les Latines, las Latinas, and also what is the connection of the Black history of Latin America and the Latinx diaspora to the history of the Black American community, to African American history, and how we all sort of fall under this big term of Blackness, and how that has come to be part of our identities, of our interactions, and how the Afro diaspora in the United States, both with connections to Latin America or not, has created an identity, right? And has created a community, and has sort of survived and persisted during time. And so we want to take this episode and this time during the celebration of Blackness in the United States to talk about this, to talk about what that means, what our interactions are, and more than that, to dream about a future, right, in which we can collaborate and work together towards all these things that we started dreaming about in the previous episode and that we hope to continue dreaming throughout the season and throughout this podcast as a whole. And so with that being said, let's jump into the conversation. What does Black History Month mean for all of you? What is, when you hear Black History Month, when you see it being promoted or being celebrated or being mentioned in classrooms, churches, et cetera, what does that word or that celebration, that term mean for you?
Bueno, I feel like for me, I've always been really excited about it growing up. So I guess I should disclose a little bit of my background to let you know my bias. But I grew up in predominantly white suburban areas where I went to school. So any chance that we did actually get the chance to celebrate Black History Month, I was always really excited because I'm like, damn, finally, like the shortest month of the year, of course. But I was always very excited to learn about Black inventors and just people who I wouldn't really learn about in school on the daily, that I felt identified me more than what I would be learning on a day to day. So to me, February is always a month where I am proud, where I'm like, damn, like, you know, my people really have done great things. And a lot of these great things, like we've talked about in the previous episodes, get erased. But being Afro Latina, to me, I kind of wonder what, or I guess I don't know as much about the inventors or the people in Latin America, the Black Latin Americans, who have done great things, who should be remembered in history. So for me, Black History Month, not only is it a time of celebration and remembrance from here in the US, I also am now trying to be more conscious about exploring these historians and these artists and everything else in Latin America that really get pushed out. I don't think in Colombia we have like a Black History Month. I think we have a day, como el Día de los Afros Latinos, que creo que es en julio, si no estoy equivocada. Pero we only have a day where it's kind of like, oh, you know, like, Feliz Día a los Afrodescendientes, talada, pero no tenemos como así todo un mes como para celebrar bien nuestra historia.
Sí, es en mayo, el 21 de mayo de el Día de la Afrocolombianidad que se celebra. So it's the 21st of May. I know it personally, but I know it very well because I started an organization for one time called Afro-Colombia New York, and we did our first event on the Afro-Colombian Day, Mayo 21. I do just want to say, I think Black history is really important. Just because we're talking about Black history, and just so that people understand, Black History Month is celebrated in February, not because it's the shortest month of the year, but it's because Carter G. Woodson, who started it, some period after Jim Crow and after Jim Crow is still not over, but you know what we mean, some period after that period of time in history, it was because it was on the second week of February, it was the birthdays of Abraham Lincoln and Frederick Douglass. So Carter G. Woodson started Black History Week, and then it became Black History Month. And so they just to keep it in the same month, it was that. I only want to say that because many people always say, oh, clearly the white man had to give us the shortest month. It's like, that's not always the necessary history of it. It had a reference of Abraham Lincoln and Frederick Douglass. Having said that, I think Black History Month is unique in the Americas. I think in the US it's a unique thing to celebrate Blackness in a month. Now, I do think that, you know, as we know, as growing up, I was born and grew up for most of my life in Colombia, but I've grown up here a lot. And I think it's important that on that month, we talk about Blackness and different impact and Afro-Latinidad. But, you know, we always say like, it shouldn't only be discussed during Black History Month. It should be discussed during other months. But I think the importance of Black History Month, for me, the last few years has been to make sure that we're understanding the Black diaspora more fully. Right? How can we more fully understand the Black diaspora? That yes, we're talking specifically about African American history, but use that month to also educate ourselves on Black diasporic struggles throughout the hemisphere, right, throughout the world, because I think that helps us to gain a fuller appreciation and understanding of the diaspora and what the diaspora has long fought for.
And I think with that, I want to highlight something that both Nora and Josue you brought up, and it's the fact that it's unique to the United States. Mi experiencia particular es yo no crecí en los Estados Unidos. Technically, politically, I did crecí en Puerto Rico. It's a long history, but anyway, I didn't come until I was 21. Y en Puerto Rico no es algo que se celebra at all. The closest that we ever get to talking about it is what it's called el Día de la Raza. And basically, it's just a celebration of mestizaje, of the coming together of the three, Taino, Africano, Español, and sort of it's durante la Semana de la Puertorriqueñidad in noviembre, and sort of that's the closest that we ever get. But other than that, until recently, there wasn't any initiatives that I saw. And so during my life, there wasn't a time ever in a calendar officially in a school or anything where Black history was celebrated, was highlighted, or where Black figures were talked about. And, you know, in the case of Puerto Rico, Arturo Schoenberg and Roberto Clemente and all these people are people that have made history but are definitely not highlighted. And so coming to the United States, the first time that I experienced February in the United States, being in North Carolina, I was very stunned by the whole idea of what this month represents. And mostly I was just, in a way, like nostalgic about the fact that this is not something that Latin America does.
I think it really should be something that Latin America should be celebrating. It should be taking more into account, because I remember during Black History Month, I was doing some research about just like the Black diaspora in general. And it was one of the things like that I won't forget. It was finding out that cumbia, the very steps within cumbia, were from that. It had that same like Black history where it came from the enslaved Africans that had their, o sea, sus pies encadenados, de esos mismos pasos de cumbia. Los pasos que uno ve viene de esa misma historia de los africanos que tenían sus pies encadenados. Entonces uno cuando observa esos mismos pasos, uno ve que de eso de coming Like your feet always come back together. There's always that coming back together, and you see that it's from that same history. And so learning about that, it's just like, wow, that's like, it goes into the Black struggle, but also the Black joy, like how far it can reach, where people, the dances that survive, the ways that people express themselves, it survived and it's changed and it's manifested itself into the ways that we still do today. Like even in salsa, the ways that we like, and just thinking about how just like those little subtle things, like the how our feet move within these dances, it's like, for me, it blew my mind. I was like, wow, this is not something I've ever heard. I don't think I would have ever been taught this. So I think thinking to like how much Black history is still prevalent, and it's still like kind of in the very things that we eat, the things that we do as Latinos, is something that I think is really understated. It's never talked about. Like things like salsa, cumbia are never talked about in a black sense here in Colombia, at least. So it's not. It's something that I think is really understated.
That detail of lineage is something that never would have crossed my mind. Like, música en general, yes, but like even the specificity of like how we move and the meaning behind that and the ancestry of that being so beautifully Black. Like, I think what we're even doing right now of reflecting upon aspects of celebrating Blackness within Latinx cultures, countries, experience is something that really highlights the usefulness of having a Black History Month. In that I see two pieces. I see the one piece of just the example of even emphasis of centering Blackness and celebration of just all the goodness, all the goodness that we are and that we bring and that we have been and we have brought for a very, very long time. And expanding that beyond, I wouldn't say just so much beyond the US. I would say specifically expanding that into Latinx spaces because, and this brings me to the other piece I'm thinking about when it comes to Black History Month. As someone who is, I am Dominican and I am African American. My father's African American from Detroit. My mother is from La Capital, Santo Domingo. And so my experience of the month is, I guess I could say that, so growing up, my experience of the month was very similar to something that Nora shared in terms of like, I experienced it as Pan-African-ish. And I add the ish now, with a different level of awareness, realizing that Latinx community was pretty much like non-existent in the celebration and in the discussion, in the centering and emphasis of Black History Month here in the US. It just wasn't there. But when it came to people from the West Indies, when it came to people who had directly immigrated from Africa in more recent generations or intentionally were not a part of the slave trade, that is something that was included. So that's, I'm like, it was Pan-African-ish, you know? And now I'm, as an adult, I see some of the gaps. And I think that expanding this centering and this emphasis and this celebration is really beautiful in just a general sense. And then also, I think connecting to the way that Black History Month has been celebrated here in the US as a predominantly African-American, I would say centered, although Pan-African-ish in its form of celebration, is also useful because there are tensions between African-American peoples and persons who are immigrants or immediate children of immigrants from the Black diaspora. Like there's tension between Afro-Latinx and African-American, there just is. And I think when it comes to how this country sets up the levels of power as to who gets to access what, and being an immigrant period of any ethnicity, you're coming into a space And the smart thing to do by default is to assess like who has the power and who doesn't. And by default, who do you want to align yourself with when you're trying to make a new life in a place? You don't want to align yourself in general by default. You don't want to align yourself with those who are considered at the bottom. And then I can go on and on about all the narratives that are perpetuated globally, thanks Hollywood, about Black Americans and the ghetto and, you know, how Black Americans are lazy and, you know, all these, yes, anti-Black in general, but anti-Black specific to African-Americans in the US that makes anyone who is an immigrant, but especially if you are a Black immigrant, not want to identify with that community, because we see the same tensions. I think the conversation is more common in this angle. See the same tensions between African immigrants and African Americans. We're having, you know, similar conversations, but I would say that conversation of that tension has a much longer standing. Like, I don't really hear or see much of that conversation around this particular tension. So all that to say, I'm excited about this episode.
Can I ask you a little, can you speak on it more, Esperanza? Because you come from both, right? From an Afro Latinx, Latina perspective. And can, because I sense that from my experience as an Afro Colombiano, as an Afro Latino, as an Afro descendant, but you know it experientially. So how, what, because you said like there is just tension. And I do know this whole thing about the Blackness and the different levels of Blackness, but I feel sometimes it comes, I think it's from both sides, but I don't know. I would like to hear a little bit more about you. I just want to hear you speak on it a little bit more, because I think you know it more than, for example, más que yo lo puedo saber.
Well, I'm curious, and this would also be helpful to me in what I will share. What is it that you sense? What is it that you experience?
So what I experience is often this fear of opening Blackness too much to include too many people, where then African Americans are not centered in Black discussions. So for example, like when Obama was elected president, right? It was a big celebration moment, but there was a subtext of like, well, he's not really African American because he doesn't come from the legacy of slavery in the US. When Kamala Harris was elected vice president, it was like, well, that's great. She went to Howard, right? But then it was like, but she doesn't come from the legacy of slavery. So I saw a lot of people say like, I want this country to one time elect someone who comes from the specific legacy of slavery of the US into something. So then I was thinking of like the immediate at first, Obama had got rejected by, you know, Cornel West and Jesse Jackson and some of the Black like elite, right? That were like, I don't know about you. And so then so I've always sensed that there's that subtext. And then I think in my personal game, when I've challenged African-Americans to be like, oh, Blackness is broader. It just seems like it's like, what are we centering? Are we centering Blackness or are we centering African-Americanness? And I don't know if that comes from a U.S., you know, like a sort of U.S. exceptionalism place, or if that comes from a representation place, you know, and I wonder that sometimes.
Those are some really good questions. I would definitely say, I want to start with where you ended. I do not believe to any degree that it comes from a U.S. exceptionalism place. I think it comes from the opposite. It comes from a place of I didn't expect so many emotions to come up, so many feelings. It comes from a place of being so beaten down, being so oppressed by not only the, you know, lead oppressor, but also by people who share African lineage with us. Like, point blank, we get shit on by everybody. Like, everybody. And so there's this aspect of protection. Like, it's about protection. It's about, wait a minute, how safe are you? Like, Cornel West and all these folks who I'll stick to the time frame you were speaking of, because of course the conversation around Obama progressed and got really complicated about a lot of different things. But in terms of that initial suspicion of him, was multi-layered, and yes, he does not come from that lineage of slavery, of enslaved peoples, and then also because he's biracial. And so there's this sense of specifically biracial with
white mother. White American, like, so colorism, white, yeah.
So the colorism, but also indoctrination. Like this is really the thing that gets missed when it comes to the suspicion that, let me be very clear, because I am a combination of the two, I myself have been and am at times a target of the same suspicion. So I really am in the middle when it comes to this thing of experiencing it both ways, you know. The indoctrination is really the primary concern. How much do you hate yourself as a Black person who is not African American? How much do you hate yourself? How much have you been seduced by the aspects of your identity that give you a little more access than is given to me? And how willing are you quickly, how willing are you to weaponize that? It's really about sussing out at its core. It's really about sussing out where's your heart and where's your mindset. Are you safe? You know, because the degree to which you have internalized, you know, the self-hatred, that determines whether or not you're going to jack stuff up if we let you in. So we're trying to make sure, like, okay, where are you at? Because there is a certain general awareness of, within white spaces, non-African American Black people are perceived as less threatening, perceived as less likely to be radical, less likely to make noise. This is not only the case when it comes to Afro-Latinx, but also the case when it comes to West Indian peoples and when it comes to African immigrants. That is the perception. And so we see that. We see how white people engage with non-African American Black people. And it's like, okay, that is a, on the one hand, yes, a point of pain. And so there's a lot of trauma and stress there that I will say does impact the, or can impact the accuracy with which someone's safety is assessed. I'm not saying someone's safety is always accurately assessed, because there are these other pieces in place that can cloud vision. But I am saying more often than not, the intention is assessing safety, because there is a level of access that is given to non-African American Black peoples by white people, because the collective, for a variety of reasons, perceived as less threatening and less radicalized.
That's deep. That's good, because there's a lot of truth in that. Like and to get everyone else's perspective, my mentor, Miriam Jimenez Roman, founder of the Afro-Latina Forum, and scholar and all that, she always said, like, we take our cues, Afro-Latinos, Afro-Latinxes, we take our cues from the African-American community, because they directly oppose white supremacy. Like, she always told us that. And that always stuck in my mind, but that makes sense. So thank you. That just makes sense, because there is that aspect of kind of, especially with the like what we mentioned last month of anti-Blackness, there is a part of pigmentocracy that we've been able to work differently within the system, right? There's a different way that Latinos, Latinas, Latinxes worked within the system, where the US was a project of like one or the other. And I know that simply that's oversimplification, but there's definitely a different way of interacting within the Spanish descendant empire and the British descendant empire. So
yeah, I think it's a thing where Latino as a term, Latinx, whatever, Latina, acts sort of as a buffer for people who interact. And so whether, regardless of what your presentation is, como cual tu fenotipo is, as soon as you open your mouth and something other than African American can be detected, it's almost like a buffer to where, like Esperanza was saying, and again, I can't speak to the African American experience, but it's almost seen as, okay, I have a, like a, it's less threatening, right? Because I have something else to go to. And to me, I think that connects, and I want to hear other perspectives on this, to an issue of definition and how like Blackness gets defined, how Latinidad gets defined, and how like the struggles of minoritized communities are defined. Because what I think about, right, is, for example, immigration, right? And when in the US, in the rhetoric that talks about Latinos, it always mentions immigration, and it sees immigration as this thing that centralizes mostly Central American and Mexican communities, and mostly people that present in a particular way. But we don't talk about, you know, the immigration of Black people from Latin America or elsewhere, and how there's a straight passage between or connection between African countries and the Mexican US border for immigration. And so like there's all these things I think that have to do as well with this issue of suspicion and safety, that also have to do with how things have been defined, right, and the stereotypes that have been assigned to different communities. And again, I think this connects back to what we mentioned at the beginning. It's also the fact that for most of us, I know for me, even with the effort that my parents did or the people in my family or my community did, I'm not getting the same level of education or interaction with what my Black identity means for my existence that I think is done for the African-American community, or that's something that takes, or from what I've seen, takes prevalence since day one. Like it's something that children are interacting with from the beginning, whereas even for those communities in Latino America, and I'll say for Puerto Rico specifically, that are proud of their Blackness, yes, this is part of the conversation, but it's only something that is done in the home context. You know, it's not something that you'll get in school. It's not something that you'll get in your community. It's not something that is being centered by the majority of the community around you. So you're not getting it in a library. You're not getting it in your history text and things like that. And although the case of the public education system in the US, you could say the same, I think there's a certain level of emphasis and highlighting that gets done with things like Black History Month, but also in general with the intentions of the Black American or the African American community in the US, that is not the same or doesn't translate the same for the Latinx community, whether that's in the diaspora or in continental Latin America.
I guess I want to touch a little bit on the point that you said about education and a little bit on what Esperanza said about just knowing self. I think what a lot of us, or I don't know, let me speak for myself when I say I experienced, and this goes to the point that you said of we get, you know, shitted on by a lot of people. I experienced a lot of like, I am very clearly Black, right? But I experienced a lot of denial of my Blackness by both American people, white American people, as well as Black Americans, because my history of slavery wasn't tied to the US history of slavery, right? And I think that because the transatlantic slave trade is not taught correctly, and it's not taught like expansively, it does a lot of erasure for people, right? So because a lot of like I know very clearly, and I know from a very young age, about my ancestors who were slaves, right? Just even in my last names, it's very clear that I come from enslaved people. It's just, and I always tell people, I was like, my ancestorship just landed in South America, while your ancestors' ship landed in North America. But that is because I know a little bit of history, right? And so not knowing history, not really knowing how expansive the transatlantic trade was, really does a lot of erasing of who is Black and who isn't Black. Even though I typically really do show up. Like, I'm Black from my head to my toes, you know what I'm saying? But I remember in middle school, I remember in high school, constantly having to reaffirm my Blackness, not only to white Americans, but also Black Americans. And I think that that creates this kind of like, this is us and you are them, because you speak another language, instead of really being able to encompass us all as part of the diaspora. But as well as what you were saying about education, Yolanda, in our countries, I think that in our countries it's so emphasized this mestizaje, 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 while in the US it's like the one drop rule, you know? So I think that it's easier to have this group that is identified as Black, while in Colombia, it's like, you know, I feel like in Latin America, I don't know about the rest of Latin America, but in Colombia, sometimes people be calling other people Negros and they are not at all, right? So it's interesting that I think that these constructs of who is allowed to be Black and who isn't allowed to be Black, having it tied to where your ancestors' slave ship was dropped, but also on this aspect of like in Latin America, mestizaje was pushed, while here mestizaje was not pushed, right? So I think that it does create for more exclusion here in the US, but it also creates for people of that same group that are excluded to find themselves and to be a little bit more radical in their celebrations of self.
Nora, that framing that you just offered is so perfect. It's so perfect. That difference makes all the difference in terms of, again, speaking about the waters that we swim in, the water that we're in, and the influence that that has on our psyche and on our racial identities, you know, it makes such a difference when it comes to the dynamics that are happening between people, you know, because you have not only the Black gatekeeping among African Americans when it comes to non-African American Black peoples within the US, because of all these different pieces that we're naming, but then also additionally, speaking to a layer you were highlighting of like, yo, phenotypically, like there's no question, like there's not a question mark for me. And yet I'm still hitting this wall around acceptance. And I'm thinking about how even within the group of African American, there's also Black gatekeeping that happens, because that same drive of that same fear and desire for safety of like, how much do you hate yourself? No one is exempt from that question. No, it doesn't matter how dark skinned you are. It doesn't matter how wide your nose is. It doesn't matter how coily and kinky your hair is. You know, if you present culturally in a way that even seems not quite the type of Black that is considered safe, then it's like, hold on, wait a minute. Now, are you into rock and roll just because it bangs, or are you into rock and roll because you on that bullshit? You know what I'm saying? It's like, wait a minute, what's happening here, you know? Even though we can get into the history of rock and roll being co-opted because Black people made that too. So boom. We also make country music and everything else. We're fabulous. So there's that. But in terms of how these things, you know, have been co-opted and are, you know, dominated by white people in these number of ways, it's like, hold on. Like, what is the root of this quote unquote, for lack of a better word in these times, variant of Blackness? You know what I'm saying? Like, is it just a little bit of extra zhuzh, a little color? Is it just some decoration, or is it signaling something that I should pay attention to and steer clear of? And like for me, as someone who, depending on how my hair is, depending on the time of year, so depending on if I'm more tan or less tan, come on, Yolanda, I know you're about to know what I'm talking about.
Yes, yes.
Depending on where I am in the country, people have different ideas as to whether or not I phenotypically present as straight up Black. And for me growing up, I experienced a lot of what you described, resistance of around acceptance. And I got a whole entire Detroit West Side African American grandparents fled Tennessee, my grandfather was fleeing the KKK because he was protecting his sister from white men raping her. And he fled to, like, that is my half my lineage, child. And still, people are like, you're not Black, you that Spanish girl. You know, especially when, you know, I wore my hair pretty much straight most of the time. Especially, you know, 90s was all about that creamy crack. 90s was all about the perms, or we African-American people, we call it perm, but it's really relaxer, you know, the relaxers, the rizao. Okay, how about that? We know that word, the rizao. Especially, you know, I had my hair straight and, you know, it's down my back, and the whole stupid stereotype of Black people not in some universe, not being able to have long hair. So the fact that I had long hair that was worn straight, depending on the time of year, according to some people would categorize me as light skin, some people would categorize me as in the middle, you know, it depends. It was like, you're not really, or if it wasn't just, you're not really Black, like, I can't tell you how many times I got the question, what are you? Like, people who are not considered phenotypically confusing don't get that question. You know what I'm saying? What are you? There's that whole thing. And then that's making me think of the gendered aspect of that as I got older, going into high school, where now hormones are raging everywhere. And there's now this different hierarchy of who is considered beautiful. And not only when it comes to certain features, leaning towards, not even being close to, because girl, pale where? I know y'all can't see as you're listening, but you'll see a picture of me somewhere. Just leaning a little bit more towards NASA. And so considered to be, you know, more acceptable in terms of beauty. Yeah, there's that piece, but there's also the piece of like, well, you're also Latina. So within the African-American community, as a woman, that automatically makes you more desirable by default, period, you know? And so there's all these other pieces at play. While all this is happening, I'm just feeling alone and rejected and hurt and confused and a stressed out introvert in high school that is being labeled all these other things. Oh, she's stuck up. She thinks she better. She thinks she this, she thinks she that. It's like, actually, you think these things because of the water that we're in. It's not your fault. You think these things because of the water we're in. I'm just trying to mind my business.
Yeah. It makes me think of this term, the burden of proof, right? Esta idea que viene de términos legales, but it's used in philosophy as well, where como que esta presión de que if you're in any way confusing, como tú dijiste, you have to prove yourself. And prove yourself in different ways, porque aun cuando tú hablas acerca de, you know, what it means to prove yourself as being Black, it makes me think of all my experience con lo contrario, right? All of the places where people would get confused why I speak Spanish and would be like, ay, ¿dónde tú aprendiste español? Y yo, en mi casa. ¿Cómo que en tu casa? And I'm like, bueno, porque yo soy puertorriqueña, you know, there's Black people in Puerto Rico. And I'm like, and you know, and I don't even phenotypically present in the ways that, like, really Black people in Latin America or even the United States would be defined sometimes. And so it's this whole idea of the burden of proof, but I think also what it makes me think, it's this whole idea of how the phenotype of Blackness gets utilized, especially by the Latino community and particularly by women in the Latino community, which I think is something that you highlighted. And we'll have a whole episode on womanhood and like femininity and all of these ideas, but it makes me think of people, and I mean, she's Hispanic, not Latino, those are different, not interchangeable, but like people like Rosalia or Karol G or all of these people who are women who are highlighted in the music industry right now, who have utilized sort of these Black aesthetics, these Black expressions, this Black music to get popular. And so if you get a Black woman, Latina or not, doing the same things, then that's not perceived in the same way as it is from these women. And so it's something that expands to also the way that Black music has been co-opted, the way that, for example, reggaeton, now the biggest names in reggaeton are all white. Even talking about the Puerto Ricans as well, where somebody like Tego Calderon or somebody like Sech, who was more recently famous, don't get highlighted as much as somebody, let's say, like Bad Bunny or J Balvin, because they present as white. And so I think it's both.
You mean J Balvin, who was just recently named Afro-Latino Music Artist of the Year?
That bullshit right there, I was just about to say.
Por no empiece, no empiece.
Por favor, mira que, ay, Cristo, eso. Exactly. Yo creo que ese es el ejemplo perfecto about what is happening. And I think what touches on both what was mentioned before and what we're gearing towards now, it's the way that all of these things cooperate that I think both create the suspicion that we're talking about, but also create pain, both for the Black American community, but for the Black Latino community. Because, you know, that conversation, cuando le dieron el premio a J Balvin, people were like, what? Where? Like, how is this even a thing that's happening, especially with the way that J Balvin has been talked about in social media in the last couple of months? People are like, and this is how it proves that we still have a problem, right? And this is that is still something prevalent, que queremos hablar about all of this wokeness and how como que la comunidad latina y todas estas cosas, and how we're like pan latino, una sola comunidad, la familia, all of these ways, but we still get things like J Balvin being named Afro Latino Artist of the Year, that for those who decide seem harmless, but for everybody else really clearly communicates that divide, right? And that problem, and really clearly communicates to other communities as well. For example, the Black American community, that there's an inherent like internal problem que nosotros no hemos bregado con él, like we haven't dealt with it. Y entonces, ¿por qué tan, like, why would they deal with it, right? If we haven't deal with it ourselves, because then it's like, oh, there's an internal issue there. And so yeah, I think there's a connection on many ways that at the end, it's like a place of pain and trauma for both communities in which they both come to interact. And I think in the place of the United States with the diaspora that often come to interact in the same geographical spaces because they get pushed together. So like, I think about my mom who grew up in the Bronx, right? And like the people who grew up around her and people who have this experience with Philly and New York and all these other places where there's sort of forced interaction as well, and how that produces certain things that are painful, but sometimes can be beautiful too. For example, salsa, right? Which was formed in the diaspora in the New York and hip hop and things like that.
I think that's really good, because I think that's where we get to the things that unite us, right? We can talk about the different things. I think that's an interesting, I was glad, thank you, Esperanza, for sharing that, because I think I've always, not struggled with it, it's just I understand some of it, but I agree with Nora, like, we're just literally talking about where a ship landed, like, that's what we're talking about, and then we're saying, but the project of those two things was different. But I think that's always been a similar thing, right? The claiming the erasure of Blackness, like we spoke about last month. And I think that's where I understand and why there's a hesitancy of African Americans. And this was overgeneralization, so I don't want to overgeneralize, but what there has been a sort of like, are you Black like me, or how are you Black? What's your Blackness? And I get that. I also think that that's a good discussion to have during Black History Month. Like, I think, like, I have been, Esperanza and I were part of that panel. Remember Esperanza with the TDJ School of Theology, when they were basically talking about that, like some of the, they didn't touch on that really clearly, but I spoke about that. Like, yeah, there's an Africana theology reader that features no one from Afro-Latino diaspora. So is it really Africana, or is it just Africana as defined by the scholars that decided to define what Africana is? Are we talking English dominant? Are we also including, because we often don't include Haiti in these conversations. We often don't include, and then Haiti doesn't include get included in Caribbean celebrations sometimes, doesn't get included in Latino celebrations. So like, so it's a very interesting conversation. And I think that that's the power of Black History Month, right? That I think it gives us a focus on that, right? It gives us an idea to focus and to be like, great, let's narrow things down and let's focus on that thing. So.
Yeah. Oh my goodness. You touched on so many good things. And the first thing that comes to mind that I want to highlight is like, there also is a different degree of emotional investment in the gatekeeping when I would say, I think it's important to acknowledge there is something different about having a country to identify with versus the African-American displacement.
Yes, yes.
It's a whole nother level of displacement. Speaking of my African-Americanness, all we have is our culture. Period. So if that isn't being gatekeeped, if that isn't being attended to, then we're just totally in the wind. And so not to say that, something just distracted me. But the point is there's a different level of investment there because there's a different layer of trauma there involved. And also at the same time, the way that that is done needs to be unpacked. The traumas need to be unpacked and talked through so that we're not just continuously harming each other, you know? And so we're not just continuously really driving our efforts into the ground. Like you were giving the example, Josue, of, you know, this Africana resource and you're naming like, but there's an entire geographic gloriousness of Blackness that was left out of this, you know, and it's still being defined as Africana, you know, there's so many things, but yeah, the piece of having a country to identify with versus not having a country. I don't know how much more so I would even feel that if I didn't also have my Dominican identity to fall back on. There are literally moments where I internally lean back on that to ground myself. You know, I'm about to start the process of getting my Dominican passport because thankfully I can do that because my mother's Dominican. And you know, so like for real, like things are getting real over here, real falling apart. And I'm like, ooh, it's time for me to cash in on that. On that other connection. Like,
no, and it's the way it's the way that land has a role, right? And so because even for me, right, I can't get a Puerto Rican passport because that's not a thing. Like Puerto Rican nationality doesn't exist. But at the same time, I get to go quote unquote home, right? And I got to a couple weeks ago be like, no, yo me voy para Puerto Rico where everybody speaks like me and like mi familia está allí and they eat my food and things like that. And it's not an experience that translates right to the Black American community. And so I think there's so many levels and layers there. And I think the role of land and belonging, I think is something that for both the Latino community and the Black American community is very, very important, right? And the idea of belonging and having community. And sometimes that gets blurred in conversation, especially because we don't understand these complexities. But I think at the same time, you know, talking about other things that we have mentioned, it can also become something beautiful, right? It can also be the beginning of talking about these things and also creating beautiful things together. And so I think Black History Month and the role that history itself for Black history has is not only that it creates that belonging and it gives you something, like you said, esperanza to fall back on, but it also enables you to sort of walk and dream about what's next, right? And dream about what something different might look like.
Yeah, absolutely. And just to touch on this really quick, like, something I see within the conversation within the African-American community. And also, especially, I was really thinking about this when you're, cuando estaba mencionando like J Balvin and Bad Bunny and like, woo, the whole situation when it comes to Afro-Latinidad and representation or lack of representation and co-opting, et cetera, when it comes to the definition of Blackness, it's like there, estamos en este caos, that different combinations of even defining Blackness, because there's the Blackness of phenotype, there's the Blackness of culture, and there's the Blackness of lineage that doesn't always show up in phenotype. So we have these, at least off the top of my head, three components that I can think of that really define these different modalities of Blackness. And sometimes one person is screaming about, you know, the Blackness of phenotype, and I'm speaking about within the Afro-Latinx context. Sometimes one person is screaming about the, you know, Blackness as phenotype aspect, like, you know, this person is not Black because you know, they're pale, they're this, they're that. And then somebody else is like, okay, but look at their lineage. Like, look at their daddy. That daddy is Black. And then somebody else is like, okay, but culturally, like, they swaying them hips right. You know what I'm saying? They got rhythm. Like, what are we, you know? And I think these are pieces, to your point, Yolanda, of like an opportunity to create something beautiful. These are pieces to be acknowledged for further conversation. These are not pieces we're naming as this is how it is, this is how it's been, and this is how it should stay.
And real quickly, and Andres, just there's also Blackness as a political alliance, right? Like Blackness as a political statement. Like when you choose Blackness, you're choosing anti-white supremacy, right? When we deny Blackness, which is why when people have doubts, it's like, I don't want to celebrate Black history. That's a political statement. Right? That's not just a feeling. That's a political statement. Sorry, go ahead, Andres.
No, I just wanted to jump on what was being said, and particularly about the phenotypes, because I think when it comes to Blackness, I think there's a kind of Black person that we like to prop up. And it's tied to gender, it's tied to phenotype. But when we think about this mix between mestizaje and the one drop rule, like we don't hold all Black people the same. Like even within that, this US one drop rule, where if you're just a little bit, like if someone in your lineage was Black, you're Black. But we don't prop up all Black people in the same way. And so I think that there's a conversation also to be had about the same contradictions that we have within our own community, where I think it was Bell Hooks that was saying that there's special evils reserved for dark-skinned people, dark-skinned women, that we don't talk about. And that's, so I think Black History Month also presents that opportunity to talk about those within the community, because I don't always like to talk about Black contradictions and, you know, in white spaces and all that stuff. There's things that we just need to set at a base level. But I think just those very contradictions are something that is something that we can also talk about. And in just a further conversation, I think when it comes to, for example, current conversations about reparations and who are the people that are going to, that we want to get reparations. And I know that it's also a growing debate on whether people from the Caribbean that have long just lineages here in the States, whether they should get reparations or should they deserve reparations. And that in itself is a whole debate that opens up different conversations. But there's within the celebrations, there's also contradictions within our own community and how we choose to celebrate and who we choose to celebrate, I think.
And so, and I agree, Andres, there's so much there, right? Because we're thinking about, right, the Latino and Latinx community, and then the Black American community, but then there's also like the West Indian community as well. And there's like internal problems there in which, like, if República Dominicana, Cuba, y Puerto Rico should be included in the West Indies because geographically we're part of them. But then, you know, there's all of these complexities, right, and all of these interactions, and again, like Esperanza saying, you know, this all ties back to the conversation that Nora was having about the history of the slave trade and what exactly, how exactly that is being presented and how exactly that is being interpreted. But I think ultimately, what this conversation leads into then is the question of how, in the midst of all of this tension, in the midst of all of these complexities that take time, right, and cannot be resolved in 40, 50 minutes, how do we dream about a future of Black love and Black celebration? Like, what does that look like? What does a future in which these communities are working together or creating something beautiful or navigating, right, that water that is surrounding us, that ocean together, what does that look like?
Yo creo que un día vamos a tener una aceptación más radical, right? And I think that a lot of that comes from centering dark-skinned Black women, really, and, you know, centering the most vulnerable within our communities. That also comes from us having a broader understanding of our history. We have a complicated and traumatic history that is expansive. But I think, yeah, I think un día vamos a tener una aceptación más radical, where we know, I think right now they have tried to limit. And when I say they, I guess I'm talking about systems that are much larger at play, like white supremacy, but I think that it's very strategic to kind of separate us into these are not Black and these are Black, because really as a whole, the diaspora is huge and in numbers, we are very powerful. So when I talk about radical acceptance, I think I am referring to being able to acknowledge and accept our por otras palabras, porque yo no tengo otras palabras, our primo, you know what I'm saying, our people that were not necessarily born in the same land, but belong to the same lineage. And that for me creates hope, because just even in our celebrations, in our histories and the people who can be acknowledged, it's so much greater, right? Like we have so much contributions that need to be highlighted. And so much protections, right? Especially for, like Andres was saying, darker skin, Black women in general, right? Because it is not just in the US where they suffer the most, it is in Latin America as well. The darker you are, it is supposed to be the darker the berry, the sweeter the juice, but the darker the berry, the harder the beatings are, right? So for me, that is what I dream of. I dream of being able to connect and to celebrate in a more expansive way.
I think one day for me, one day, all of Blackness will be celebrated without the fear of security and without the as Andres said last month, us drowning in the sea of white supremacy, but that we're able to value all levels of Blackness in a beautiful way. I think one day we will have Black History Month celebrations. And I think we're slowly getting there, that are not only focused on one perspective, but include many different perspectives of Blackness. And one day we will be able to celebrate Blackness together and understand it better.
Y para mí también con eso, el sueño es que un día también no nos sintamos amenazados when we get called out for the complexities. Because I think if there's something that was part of this conversation, it's the fact that there's a lot, right? Y hay muchas tensiones, mucho complejo y mucho que no se puede resolver en un episodio, en un season, en un mes. Like, no lo podemos hacer. Pero yo creo que El pensar en un día y cómo ese día se puede ver, lo que a mí me da esperanza es ver que podamos tener conversaciones como esta sin sentirnos atacados y poder, como dicen en Puerto Rico, el agua que nos cae, aceptarla internalizarla, bregar con ella y no sentir que el hecho de que algo se mencione o de que una persona sea centralizada, que quizás no eres tú, una identidad sea centralizada, que quizás no eres tú, no necesariamente se traduzca a una amenaza, sino que sea más una oportunidad de celebrar diferencias y de ver en el éxito de los demás nuestro propio éxito también. Because when we think about the whole of blackness, right, I think one of the beautiful things that I celebrate of that I think also happens often for the Latinx community, aun con todas las complejidades, is that when one of us wins, right, we all win, because we struggle together. And so I think in all of that, un día I dream about us being open enough and vulnerable enough to be able to have this without feeling like it's an attack or it's a threat.
Yeah.
Para mí yo digo,
perdón. No, dale.
Bueno, voy a hacer rápido aquí, pero para mí, yo creo que el hecho que nos conozcamos es algo muy radical, como está diciendo Nora. Porque en esta conversación nosotros hemos estado hablando de muchos hechos que se trata de que no nos conozcamos, o sea, que nosotros mismos no nos conocemos. Y if it's talking within different languages, I mean, just within the piece of language, where Black people can start to share languages across the diaspora. And I think that's, even just within the language barrier, that's a huge barrier within itself. So I think for me, us being able to get to know each other at a much more intimate level, and not just like seeing each other, but not being able to communicate each other, but actually being able to sit down with each other and speak across our different languages, and accepting Blackness as a whole, in a holistic sense, not just in like this, like, cishet sort of way that we like to imagine. And so I love the phrase of all Black lives matter, you know, and emphasizing that all that the way that you express yourself as a Black person right now today is enough, and that is, and it's wonderful. And so for me, I think that's what my dream would be for people in their, just in their everyday lives, to be comfortable in celebrating their Blackness and not have to police it or navigate it or be hyper-vigilant about it.
Lo que yo imagino es que un día podríamos, like, imagino an emotional generosity. La habilidad de poder llorar juntos en una manera que doesn't diminish the traumas and the difficulties and the desires of either group. And I'm speaking, tigre. Mi perrito, que le gusta hacer la bulla. You know, and thinking, yes, Pan-African elite. I know that's not a real word, but you know, they have me conjugation en pa. But specifically when it comes to African-American and Afro-Latinx, like, imagino la capacidad to be able to grieve together, because we have so much to grieve, and to be able to release that in a way that is healing and that is accepting of the legitimacy of both of our sets of wounds, so that we can actually move together en esa cumbia que Andrés habló antes.
Y yo creo que el ejemplo de la cumbia es el momento perfecto para transicionar y terminar, ¿verdad?, este episodio, pensando en que Black History Month, el mes, como diría Joe Arroyo, de la historia negra, de la historia nuestra, es una oportunidad para nosotros aprender a vivir en the tension between grief, entre el duelo, right, and the pain, pero también la celebración. También la pachanga, el coro, el bembé, la parranda, and the opportunity of, you know, while acknowledging all of these tensions and recognizing that pain and that grief, also giving ourselves the opportunity to celebrate and smile and enjoy and have, like Andrés said, black joy, right? Ese gozo, esa celebración de quienes somos, de nuestra historia y de no solo la historia que ya pasó, pero de la que poco a poco estamos creando. And so, feliz mes de la historia negra, Happy Black History Month. También queremos dar felicidades a República Dominicana por el Día de la Independencia. Sabemos que también Chile, sabemos que también Chile celebra su independencia, su feliz Día de la Independencia a los chilenos también. Y para los que celebran carnaval en Río de Janeiro y Uruguay y Montevideo y Buenos Aires, feliz carnaval. Disfrútense, bailen por mí, que no puedo bailar con ustedes. Any more reasons to celebrate? I think this is a perfect note to end in.
Celebrate blackness, y'all.
Como dijo Josué, celebremos, como dije ahorita, la historia negra, la historia nuestra. Feliz mes de la historia negra. To those of you that celebrate as well, feliz día del amor y la amistad, because it's also February. And with that in mind, let's keep right love and that fraternity as our example and as we dream together of a new future. Como mencionamos en el episodio anterior, recuerden que todos los episodios salen el tercer viernes del mes. That is the third Friday of every month at 5 p.m. And yeah, we look forward for you to join this conversation. Comment, subscribe, follow. Danos tu historia de amor. What does Black love look for you? What does Black celebration look for you? What is a way that you have seen these two communities collaborating? We're interested in hearing from you and listening to your stories and in knowing and celebrating with you, right, in that complexity as well. Y con eso nos despedimos de ustedes. Feliz febrero, feliz mes de la historia negra y nos vemos en marzo.